all present and correct.
Correct.
What correct?
I got a song for this episode. Just thought of it just now.
Oh, God.
I believe you.
I'm going back to bed.
Dean Martin's Volare. Rotarin. Whoa. Huh?
The thing is about the funny thing about Bill is when he says he has a song, he means he has a song title.
No, I could sing all the Italian lyrics, but just do, you know, Rotarin. Whoa.
Yeah, so that's putting it on a Klingon accent makes it different.
Yeah. Let's fly away to the clouds. Wait, now I'm Arnold.
Yeah, I was going to say, that took a different turn.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert. All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers. Now start acting like it.
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax. We might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello, and welcome to another episode, I must say, of Deep Space Nine. No, I've listened to The Prophets at Deep Space Nine, episode by episode retelling. Well, not a retelling. No, that would be a reboot. This is not a reboot. This is not a what if. This is not an Elseworlds. This is a Two True Freaks production. I am Bill Bemoth.
I was wondering if you couldn't remember your own name for a second, though.
With me is Andrew Amoth and Paul Bemoth.
Perhaps today is a good day to die.
And Dave Demoth.
Glory to your house.
We're all from the house of Demoth.
Demoth. Bemoth.
Apparently, Bartok's pretty liberal about handing out those little pins, so.
he's like
You can join the house of Martok.
He's like the Klingon Oprah.
Yeah,
you get it. You're in the House of Martog, and you're in the House of Martog.
I just don't see, like, the Klingon factory where they're making up little House of Martog pins.
Ah, this does not meet my quality. Send it back. Doesn't clip easily onto my sash.
Did they never make House of Martog pins?
Oh, I'm sure.
They probably did.
Yeah.
I get so many Star Trek emails right now with different products on sale that I can't imagine that they haven't. The latest one sent me a pair of Spock socks. I don't know if you guys saw this.
Spock socks?
Some of them. I have them.
Do you really? Right. Okay. They're actually kind of scary looking.
This isn't some deep space franchise. This place means something.
Maybe you could wear like a pair of Spock slippers that like you stick your foot in his mouth.
Do the Spock socks have little ears on?
Oh, they have ears on the sides, yes.
Right, yes.
So do they stick out the sides, though?
Would that not make you look more like Namor?
Well, there's definitely a similarity. But Dave, you have them. Do they stick out of the sides?
Those do, yeah. They're not. I don't wear those very often.
Really?
Yeah.
I was figuring you wear them to work.
No, I will wear. I have an earless Spock socks that I do wear to work. In my engineering, yeah, I represent.
Oh, somebody get me a fudgicle.
Fudgy the whale. Fudgy the whale. Andy wouldn't get that.
No, I've just moved a tin of cookies out of the way, and it started playing Christmas songs at me.
It's May, though. Christmas is long over.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Forgot about that.
Everything in England, you pick it up, it plays music.
Yes, it has raisins in it, apparently. I was not aware of this phenomenon, but there you go.
Everything in England has raisins in it?
Apparently.
What?
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter. Why'd you put raisins in everything? I was like, we don't put raisins in everything.
Oh, raisins in the corgi, that's why they shoot them out.
Philip! get on with the show, Philip!
Yeah, do we have any Star Trek news?
The only news I have is I've watched two of those short tracks, but we'll probably save a full discussion for when we do the Discovery show. All I will say is the Tilly one was enjoyable. The Aldis Hodge one was really quite good.
Who's Aldis Hodge?
The guy from Leverage. He was Hardison in Leverage.
Oh, is he the guy that's by himself?
He's the guy that the computer finds in the cryogenic tube. Okay. And I really quite enjoyed that one. I thought that one was quite sweet.
Aww.
I mean, they've clearly not got a budget. because both of them are focused on one or two characters and mostly empty sets.
You don't think they have a budget?
I don't think they have a lot. Certainly the Aldous Hodge one was a two-hander. It was him and the computer, basically. Yeah,
but the special effects in that were pretty intense.
Yeah, but that's what you can see. That's where all the budget's gone.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think they have a high budget, so they've decided, right, well, we won't have a crew in this one. So, and the idea behind that one's pretty interesting, and I'm wondering if they're going to go back to that in season two.
Mm, yeah.
Because as of this recording, that is the furthest forward Star Trek has ever been. Because if you think about it, since Voyager went off the air, we haven't followed anything after Nemesis, have we?
No.
So that's it. The Star Trek stopped with Nemesis. We don't know what happened beyond that.
Well, not on screen. The books were...
But on screen, this is the furthest we've gone. And even though we don't really learn anything other than the central mystery of the episode, why has Discovery now got a kit-like AI?
Yeah.
So that's quite... So I'm looking forward to the other two. As we record this, we've got the third one. I haven't seen the fourth one hasn't dropped yet.
All right, so that wraps up our news.
Well, what we laughingly refer to as news, yes.
Our old news.
Yeah.
Old news that ain't news no more.
So the episode we're talking about today is Soldiers of the Empire.
Aboard a Klingon warship,
the Rotar has been defeated again and again.
Honor has fallen to disgrace.
We will not cross the border!
A dangerous situation is developing.
Now, to prevent a mutiny...
Today would be a bad day to die.
Will Worf turn on his own commander?
You are a coward.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Which is in
could
season 5.
Could be an episode of Star Wars as well, couldn't it?
Could be.
An episode entirely from the point of view of the stormtroopers.
Did you see the new TK that came out?
What the heck is that?
I was trying to do the chat that two stormtroopers had on the... I know where it is, but I can't remember the lines. When Obi-Wan's trying... When he's sneaking around on the...
Oh, yeah.
But that was tagging Bink.
Yeah, supposedly, yeah. What was that?
Probably just a drill.
Season 5, Episode 21, Soldiers of the Empire, directed by LeVar Burton, which, man, he was pretty prolific back in the day with the Star Trek episodes.
I can fly so high.
What is that, from Reading Rainbow?
Yeah, take a look. It's in a book.
That's right. In your mind. Ah! Oh, sorry. Don't tangent me. I tangent myself enough. Little tangent. Written by Ronald D. Moore, and this aired in April 28th, 1997, which at this point I was still changing diapers for my first child. How about you guys?
I wasn't changing the diapers of your child, no.
I was getting ready to graduate high school.
I was getting out of diapers myself.
No, you were going back into them. Oh, sorry. Methuselah.
That was until this year.
Anyway, our plot goes a little like this. Oh, and by the way, I've been challenged by my co-host, Mr. Spataro, to not screw any names up. So we'll see how this goes. The episode... So I have to pause now to check each word. No, I'm just kidding. The episode opens with...
It's going to take 45 minutes to read the synopsis.
The episode opens with Dr. Bashir caring for a badly injured General Martok. Martok then receives a message from the Klingon government stating that he has been assigned to retrieve a missing Klingon vessel lost several days ago. The Klingon, I said it right, High Council.
It's Klingon.
Klingon, see, that is a correct pronunciation. The Klingon High Council assigns the general a ship of his own, the Rotaran, to accomplish the mission. He departs Deep Space Nine along with his newly appointed first officer, Worf, who has signed on to the mission at Martok's request. To Worf's surprise, Jadzia Dax joins them as the ship's science officer. The Rotaran is Martok's first command since his escape from the Dominion prison camp, and he is dismayed to find that the crew are anything but happy. Aw, it's the ship of sad Klingons. Instead, it is an embittered ensemble, ooh, that was a tricky one, whose morale has been destroyed by a series of punishing losses at the hands of the Jem'Hadar. The morale situation aboard ship is only made worse by Martok's overcautious nature and unwillingness to go into battle, and because of this, he misses a chance for an easy victory. Dax, acting as a Klingon would, challenges Worf about the general's behavior. Damn it! No, wait. That was the English pronunciation. I put an extra U in there. Right?
You put an E at the end of it.
Yeah, I backed up the belt.
That was not a mistake. You can't
rely on Andy for pronunciation, please.
Galore, see? It's behavior, which Worf will hear none of. In the mess hall, Dax is forced to stun a Klingon officer with her phaser when a pair of officers gets into violent... Oh, damn it. Damn it, I messed another one up. There's no S on the end of that get.
Make a shot. Not you, Bill, the listeners. We need you. Okay.
When a pair of officers get into... See, that's just poorly worded. That's not my fault.
It's not my fault.
Except they fixed it.
It should say, when a pair of Klingon officers get into a violent argument, almost causing the death of one of them. After this, Dax angrily confronts Worf about it and tells him that he needs to deal with the general by challenging him for command. The Bamoth, another Klingon vessel, is found just across the Cardassian border. But Martok, fearing that the Jem'Hadar... Martok doesn't fear anything. Left it behind as a trap, refuses to enter Cardassian territory to rescue it. Worf realizes Martok is paralyzed by fear. Reluctantly, he decides to challenge Martok for control of the ship. A knife fight ensues. Oh, wait, not that. That would be like, you know, West Side Story. During which Worf sees that Martok's fear is gone and allows him to win the fight. I don't think he allowed him to do anything, according to Martok. Worf sustains a nasty wound, paper cut, yet survives just as a Jem'Hadar ship approaches. The revitalized crew defeats the enemy, rescues the Mammoth, and returns to Deep Space Nine as victors for the first time. Martok is forever grateful to Worf for reminding him of his duty as a Klingon warrior and offers him a place in the house of Martok and a duty. Food car.
Yeah, it's going to make a duty joke.
Nothing quite like a good duty joke.
Nothing like a rousing, fun-loving Klingon crew.
Yeah, they were all a bit boring, weren't they, really? I'd expected more friction on a Klingon ship than this. They were all a bit too relaxed.
Well, I think that's the point. They've lost their drive. They're kind of like a bunch of beaten-down, sad-sack Klingons.
But if they were good Klingons, the way Klingons are presented to us, they would have gone on some suicide mission by now and... You know,
well, yeah, or one of them would have stood up and took command and just, you know, grabbed the bull by the horns. They're all kind of, I mean, the one younger one, Cornan, you think he would be
a barbarian,
Sumerian.
You know, until I looked up who played who, the makeup jobs on this one, did you know who any of these actors were until you looked them up?
Even looking them up, I don't know who they are.
Oh, one of them is. David Graff was
Hightower.
Yeah.
Taco Bear, no. You're right.
Yeah. I was like, really? That's who that was? And then I saw he had died at age 51, which was kind of a shocker. I'm like, oof.
Actually, him, for whatever reason, I like him.
He's Les Kit. But then Rick Worthy, who plays Cornan, I've seen him in other shows, other sci-fi and other genre shows. Didn't recognize him at all. In fact, I can't even think what else he's played in off the top of my head. But I know he has.
I liked David Graff when he was on Seinfeld. He played a cop, and Jerry was asking him for help in the diner, and he was like, okay, yeah, right after I have this cup of coffee. And then he sat down and ordered lunch. Jerry's like, he's eating lunch! But otherwise I really didn't know these actors. None of them stood out to me at all. I liked the episode. I mean, I thought it was good to show how Martok had to gain the respect of this crew. But the down and out nature of the crew just didn't seem right. I mean, how do you fail on that many missions as a Klingon and still be alive? It reminded me on The Odd Couple. They had an episode where there was a flashback to World War II, and Pat Morita was supposedly a kamikaze pilot who lost his nerve and landed safely. And that's what it sounded like to me with these guys. They just kept we've become very well at running away. You're very good at running away. Klingons are never supposed to run away.
Well, obviously they don't have any drive to... like I said, to take the Targ by the horns.
Mm.
And one of them should have stepped up by now, but it seems like they've all just kind of spiraled down to this ship and are just kind of satisfied with going along with it, or they're just so dejected and just think it's bad luck or whatever.
But I guess my point is these people have no one to blame but themselves.
Right. Right.
You know, it seems like they're down and out and they're trying to blame the world for their woes, but you know, they needed to be more aggressive and win a battle.
You're a Klingon, damn it. Step up.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. They're Klingons, and Dax spells it out at the beginning of the episode. You know, they don't just assassinate the peoples above them for the sake of doing it. They always need to have a good reason to do it. And it seems to me that these guys would have a perfectly excellent reason for doing it. I can do it better than you. We keep losing our battles. And I think that was, they all felt a bit lackadaisical to me for Klingons. It's not to say I liked the episode quite a lot, mainly because of Worf and Dax. But the problem I had with it was I didn't buy Martok being afraid of going into battle at all. I never bought that at all.
I don't think he was straight up afraid, but he was
following orders.
And but I think there was
he was hiding behind. He was too, like they said, overcautious.
Mm. But again, maybe I don't buy that with Martok.
I thought really? There was an element of it that he didn't trust his crew.
Oh, that can be too true.
Yeah, that plays more realistically for me than Martok is a by the book officer, because I don't believe that Martok is. I think if he thinks there's a good reason to go into battle, he'll go into battle.
Yeah, but I thought there was an element of it that it worked on from both ends. The crew didn't respect him, and he didn't respect them either. And they, you know, they made a big deal about how he had to earn the crew's respect, but I think it went both ways if you look at it a little deeper.
Right. So, do you think Martok was this crew's a waste of time? I'm just going to get the mission out of the way.
Yeah, I think his position was this crew's a waste of time, and if I engage somebody in battle, this crew's going to fuck it up, and we're not going to get our mission done.
Right.
Yeah, but okay. I don't think that's the way. I still think they were trying to portray him that he is gun shy because of what happened. That he's, you know, he was kind of like a
post-traumatic stress.
Yeah. Or that he's now like a whipped dog that kind of isn't ready to jump back into things like he used to. He's a little long in a tooth. He's old. You know, he was beaten down, but now
got one eye.
Yeah, right.
Am I the only one who thought as well that Dax should have been the one who took command?
Well, the only Klingon that seems like that has any spirit. Well, there was the one. What was it? Or Takin, but he was. Well, the female Klingon and the other, like, hot-headed younger guy. Because you had Cornan, which was just kind of, he was more, like, mopey. And then
they were like seven Lasket. Dwarfs.
What?
They were like the seven dwarfs. You had mopey.
It was like having a crew of teenagers.
Yeah.
I am Groot.
Whoa!
Oh, well, just to go, I've just been IMDb and Rick Worthy, I did not recognize him in this show, but once I IMDb'd him, he's recently been in Supernatural, but he was Simon in Battlestar Galactica. That's where I remember him from.
That's right. He was in Supernatural. He was like head of the vampires.
He was head of the vampires, yeah.
All right.
See, was some of this intentional on Martok's part to set it up so Worf would have to challenge him and then he would be victorious?
I didn't think so.
No, I didn't either.
I don't think he had that grand scheme in mind, because I think when Worf did challenge him, he was surprised. Although, he does kind of play him a little bit. If you want to go with that as your theory, Dave, you know, when he's saying, you know, I need you behind me. Like, you know, he kept emphasizing it almost as like a challenge to Worf. You know, I'm gonna give you orders you're not going to want to follow, and you have to follow me. Don't challenge me! You
know? Wink. I like
did
the
not
actor
bring
plays
Worf more. On. Yeah, but did he not bring Worf on to, like, I thought that he brought Worf on to motivate the crew because he couldn't be arsed with them.
That's also a possibility.
And then they start singing the Klingon Warrior song, which I'm sorry I couldn't take seriously because every verse had the word poo in it.
This episode helped Martok got his groove back.
I was just going to say that, but I think we've already used, didn't we use like how Worf got his groove back or that? Who says we can't use the same, you know, the same thing? How the Rotaran got its groove back? I don't know.
The ship of poo.
The ship of poo.
I like episodes where we get a peek at the Klingon culture, especially on the ships, like the episode where Riker went aboard and ate Goff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of Riker's best turnouts, that as well.
Yeah, Riker really proved himself where Worf took a little bit longer to get with the program. You'd think Riker's example would translate to Worf.
But Worf's admiration for Martok was getting in his way. Mm. And it took Dax to actually give him the kick up the arse that he needed to say, no, this isn't going the way it should do, which leads into, I think Dax should have been the one to take command. She was the most Klingon on that ship until the last act.
Yeah, well, just imagine true. If she hadn't come along, they'd all be dead.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. But wait, didn't she kind of invite herself? Or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because Worf was surprised. I do not wish for a long goodbye. Perhaps we should do this on the airlock. No, I'm coming with. What?
Now, I think there was also part of, you know, the subtext of this episode was to set up the distinction between the Klingons and the Jem'Hadar. Because if you just look at them at the surface, they're both a war-based culture. And you don't really get much further than that. But it's like
The Jem'Hadar bred to fight. The Klingons live to fight.
Yeah, exactly. The Jem'Hadar take no pleasure from it. They do it because it's what they're supposed to do. It's what they're, you know, what they're bred to do, and they do it to get their Tetrasil White.
Tetrasil.
I said Tetrasil. Yeah, I'm learning. I'm at the Dr. Bill School of Pronunciation.
You learn at the feet of Bill.
But you know, the Klingons do it for honor, so there's a whole different motivating factor, even though their eventual activities are the same. But that motivating factor should be a difference in, you know, just drive to win. You know, the Jem'Hadar fight because they're supposed to, and it's almost like if they lose, they lose. Whereas the Klingons, it's all a matter of honor, so you need to do everything you can to win.
And the Jem'Hadar don't care if they win or lose because they'll just breed more of them.
Mm-hmm.
I like that was put on almost literally on the table during the dinner scene where the drunk old Klingon says, maybe that's our problem. Maybe honor is our problem.
Yeah, that's why the Jem'Hadar are better than us, which, you know, that just shows how beaten down they are that he would even, say those words.
Blasphemy.
Well, I think as a Klingon, it's blasphemy to even think it and then to say it out loud. It's really taking it even another step further.
Well, and Worf's not the great motivator either, because he's got the quote that says, it is clear to me that none of you are worthy of my blood or my life, but I will stand for you.
Thanks.
I think that's a challenge to them. Show me that you are worthy of me. Because they just gave him a battle record that shows defeat after defeat after defeat. They're not worthy of his blood or his life. But he's saying, I'll do it for you anyway. Return the favor. Show me that you're worth it.
Yeah, but when you've got a crew that's so down and out, that's not a rousing motivational speak, especially the people that appear to don't have any spirit in them. I mean, I'm not saying he needs to stand up there and be a cheerleader, but maybe put some oomph or conviction behind those words. He's just the deadpan monotone.
See, I'm thinking if they have any honor left in them, they're going to try and disprove his thought that they're not worthy.
They didn't do a great job.
No, they sucked. That's besides the point. But I think that's Worf's thinking, and I don't fault that.
I'd love to have Jadzia as a first officer, but not Worf. I'm sorry. In this case, Worf just doesn't inspire me.
Well,
because
Worf isn't a great leader.
He's drinking the Martok Kool-Aid. Or the Martok blood wine.
It's I always go back to, to ramming speed. he learned from Man of Steel Jonathan Kent. You know, he believes in the no-win scenario, so he's ready to just be on a suicide mission every time.
I just realized that Worf is basically Tom Hanks in A League of Their Own. He's getting this team's like, oh, damn, okay.
And then there's no crying in battle.
He's taking like a 10-minute piss. Avoid the clap. It's good advice.
That is exceptionally good advice.
Yeah.
Especially with two penises.
Oh. Don't ever remind me of that again.
What? How Worf is quick. Well, what? Sorry.
The Martok Kool-Aid would also be a good title.
Martok Kool-Aid.
We really don't have a subplot in this one at all, huh?
It's a straightforward linear narrative, this one, isn't it? Worf and Martok go on a Klingon ship, and Dax goes with them, and that's pretty much it. And we don't even really see the final confrontation.
No, they just come back victorious.
Yeah, and it's another one of those Deep Space Nines. I mean, it's probably better than watching events unfold on a view screen, which we've had quite a lot in Deep Space Nine. But I did feel a little bit cheated that we didn't get to see the fight.
Well, about the only other scene I remember outside of this was when Nog is trying to, like, isn't this the one where he's trying to scoot past them?
Yeah.
He's like,
that was actually a really good scene because he's getting pissed at Worf. Like, we're going to recalibrate this again.
Again. I don't know if I'd want to serve under Worf. Although, you know what? Now that I think about it, my first officer on my first ship, he kind of looked like Worf, now that I think about it. Michael Dorn looked to him.
I did like the scene at the beginning where Martok and Worf are practicing the fighting on each other. But when he gets wounded and goes to Bashir, he tells him that he did it in the holosuite. I like that bit.
Yeah.
And I love Martok's just general intolerance towards Bashir generally.
That's pretty much how everybody treats Bashir. We tolerate him.
Poor guy. Although Bashir came back with a good line, the line about you got blood on my carpet. That's moderately funny. But for the rest of it, they weren't really on Deep Space Nine. Like, everyone else got the week off, didn't they?
Yeah, pretty much. So I don't know. I did, you know, we're digging into it, which is our job here. But when I was watching it, I felt like I watched it much more on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't. I wasn't getting into, okay, what's in their head, which, you know, we're doing that now, which is good. But I don't feel this episode really inspired doing that. We're doing it because that's what we do. And once we start digging in, it's all right. There's some stuff there. But I feel like on the surface, it was an enjoyable surface level episode, and it really didn't make you think about those things.
Yeah, it reminded me of the Quark Ordo episode. We didn't really learn anything new about Worf here, that he's honorable and he will stand up for what's right, and sometimes he has to be pushed into it. We knew all of that. We know that Dax is probably better Klingon than 90% of the Klingons that we meet. We already know that. Martok needs a little bit of a kick up the arse to get his Klingon groove back. Well, we kind of already knew that from his years of captivity. The only thing that really came out of this one is that much closer bond between Martok and Worf. And it's nice that Worf's met a Klingon who is as honourable as he is. All the other Klingons he meets seem to be scurrilous assholes. So in Martok, he's found a soulmate. And I like their friendship. And I love the ending where Martok's like, you were right to do what you did. You were absolutely right. There's no animosity between them. And I love the bit with Worf at the end. How did you know I wouldn't kill you? And Worf's like, I didn't. I didn't know you wouldn't kill me. And that's like two proper Klingons there having a moment of, yeah, you're an honourable guy. I just expected them to headbutt each other there and then go and have a drink.
I did like, I'm just thinking about that now, that when Worf is trying to explain to Sisko how Martok saved his life, and it was just by looking at him in a certain way.
Is that, oh, yeah.
Humans wouldn't understand. And I like, my thought afterwards was, after he gave that little speech, I was like, yeah, I don't understand.
So, yeah, I think it's a good one. It's an enjoyable one. It's another Ronald D. Moore script that's hugely entertaining from start to finish, but I didn't come out of it thinking there was a lot to it, and I didn't come out of it having learned anything new about the characters.
I think the fact that I don't know if it sums up the episode, but what I was doing while I was watching this, okay, insert joke there, I opened up the door, anybody want to step in? No, thank you. So while I was watching this episode, I was performing basically a mindless task. I was putting comic book backing boards into bags, and I was just sitting there and doing that while watching. I was kind of like the Klingon off, you know, crew. I was just kind of like, yeah, I'm just performing this task while I'm watching this episode. I mean, it wasn't like some episodes where I stop and I watch and I engage in the episode. It was okay. There was points that are here that I did engage in it and stopped. But overall, most of it was just kind of there in the background to help me pass the time while I was doing something that was mindless.
See, I had two experiences with this episode because I put in the wrong disc for a previous recording. So I watched this and realized, wait, this is out of order. The first
We're all
time
out
I
of
watched
order.
This, well, first time I watched this, I thought it was a great episode. Was intrigued. It kept me invested. The second time, however, when I realized what the payoff was and how kind of empty that payoff is, it did not have the same effect. With the exception of the final scene with Martok, it just didn't. It was like you, Bill. I was kind of a drone. Like, I got to do this for the show, but
yeah, because this was the second time I'd watched this, and I think I did have more engagement the first time. now that you mention it. Whereas this time I was like, yeah, I haven't watched this in a while. Let me just review this. Okay, it's here. Yeah, let me sort these. Let me put these boards in these bags.
The other thing about this episode that I'm thinking the purpose of it, you know, Andy mentioned that we really don't have much of a character arc for Worf. And I'm thinking we weren't meant to have a character arc for Worf. This is supposed to be, even though he's not who we're focusing on through the episode, I think it's supposed to be ultimately to make Martok a viable character for future episodes and somebody who they can bring back and who we will now have some respect for.
Do we want to rate this?
Yeah, I think we do.
Yeah. I hate to give a Klingon episode a lower score, but I'm going to go right in the middle and give this 2.5 Bloodstains on the Carpet.
Yeah, that's exactly where I am. I think it was just an average episode. It was enjoyable. There was nothing wrong with it, but it was, it was one that I watched. I kind of enjoyed it as I watched it. Then it was over, and I'm ready for Children of Time.
I'm at 3 because I did enjoy it. I don't want to give the impression that this was one of those episodes we didn't like. I think we all enjoyed it.
Well, I don't think any of us didn't like it. It's just it was all right.
Yeah, it's a Ronald D. Moore script, and he's only ever let us down once with Aquiel, which is shit. But this was hugely enjoyable. So I'm going to settle on 3. I don't think it's a great one, but if we go comparatively, a 3 score in season 5 is probably the equivalent of a 4 back in season 2. So this is still a very good episode.
I don't like your math.
Season 5 is of a much higher quality, so a 3 is a higher 3 than it would have been 3 seasons ago.
I disagree. A 3 is a 3 is a 3.
All right, I'm giving this a 4 then.
If you're rating it that way.
See, now Andy's throwing me off because I'm gonna give it a 3 as well, and pretty much for the same reason that it was enjoyable. It was fairly average, but it's average during a season of really stellar episodes, especially some coming up.
Yeah, see, I don't mean to be the nitpicker, but hey, I'm picking at nits here. I really think that your rating system should be this episode on its own, not in context with the episodes around it. I think we've come up against that before, where we've had like a really rousing episode and then we've had one that let us down afterwards, and as we've talked through it, we've said, yeah, you know, I was disappointed with this one because the other one before it was so good. But then as we talk through it, we start rating it on its own as an episode. So I'm kind of loath to say, yeah, you know, if this was in another season, this is a 5, but season 5 is so great that I'm giving it a 2.
I'll throw it to you this way. Ferengi Love Songs was a very 2.5 episode. This was better than Ferengi Love Songs, so it gets a 3.
There's a logic there that I can kind of go with. Actually, you gave Ferengi Love Songs a 3, by the way. No,
that's just besides the point. 3.5 then. I'm not giving this the same mark as Ferengi Love Songs.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Andy
on that. Yeah. All right, I'm changing you in the spreadsheet now, but I rated Ferengi Love Songs considerably higher than I rated this one. I was the highest on Ferengi Love Songs. You guys were all 3s, and I was a 3.5.
We're just trying to stay consistent within ourselves, Paul.
Yeah, I get that. Well, and consistent within yourselves is true, but the series as a whole is what I'm asking you to rate it on, not just one season. You get what I'm saying? I mean, am I making sense, or am I just being annoying? Because I often do both at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to say, you.
No, you're making sense, but we have got to the point in the show now where it's at a consistent level of enjoyability. This is essentially season 3 and 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. You're tuning in every week, and you're not getting anything near the level of dreck that we got in some of the earlier shows. But even within that context, this is only a little bit better than average. But a little bit better than average now is better than a little bit better than average used to be, when we didn't know how good the show was going to get. So I agree with you, so I'm pushing it up to 3.5.
Okay, I'm all right with that logic. I still say it was an average episode, and I'm putting it at 2.5. I agree with your logic, but I am not changing my rating.
My logic,
the line is drawn
uncertain.
Here, no further.
My logic is uncertain where Deep Space Nine is concerned. So
anyway, what did Glenn think?
I was going to say, but enough about what we think.
Well, is anybody going to sing me in?
Blame, 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 blame.
Na 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 na. Hey, Blaine. And we can just repeat that for 20 minutes.
Yeah, Dave, that's your editing job there.
Yep.
And every once in a while, you got to stick it up. Blaine, Blaney, 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 Blaney. Anyway. Ow. Blaine says, hi, guys.
Tyler, whoops.
Hi, guys. A Klingon episode. Yay. Really, though, this was a decent one. Martok had a valid position, but it was so out of place on a Klingon bird of prey that we understand the concerns about him. The dynamic between he and Worf is great, and if memory serves, it's important that Worf joins the House of Martok. I also like that this showcases Dax's ability to blend into almost any culture, be it Klingon, Ferengi, human, Bajoran, etc. It's something that sets her apart from the rest of the show. Blaine. Ooh. The rest of the crew, excuse me, I read that wrong.
Blaine just hit on something, because there was a Star Trek Waypoint special, which is from IDW. It's kind of an anthology across all Star Trek, and it dealt with Adax, not Jadzia, but Ezri, and it did kind of visualize what her skill set would be with the symbiont, that you could get, you reference, this person was an engineer, this person was a gymnast, this person was a Klingon, and she totally channels that. And I just realized that, A, you should probably read that Waypoint special if you can find it in May. B, Dax really did steal the episode. She was kind of the MVP.
Yeah, she actually was. I agree.
Mm-hmm. And Blaine saying how different she is just kind of drove that home for me.
Yeah, she is. And as usual, she does salvage the show in a lot of ways. And it's going to be a shame when she goes, unfortunately.
I know not of what you speak. Spoilers. But we have a ways to go yet.
Yes. Are we doing an email?
We probably should.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the first one is Faith. Have we done a time to stand yet?
No.
Is that coming up? All right, so we can't go to Faith's email yet then. So Freudian slip, I'll do that one. All right, so we'll have a look at the emails. The first email is Freudian slip. It's from Melia004. Oh, Matt. He's actually written at the bottom. It's Matt E. Hello, Matt. Just listened to the episode for 501 Apocalypse as I catch up to the most current release, and I heard something that made me laugh quite a lot. Dr. Bill of Damar. Oh, sorry, on Damar. Damar is like the emo. If you could get an emo Cardassian, there you are. Jeez, man, with his comments all the time. Blah, 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 blah. Shut up. Like a teenager back there. Dr. Bill reading a plot synopsis. See above.
Did we already do this one?
And we should do this every week.
I kid. Keep up the excellent work. I'll be listening. I don't know if we did that one, but it's worth doing again.
Great. We'll read that every time I do an episode.
All right, well, do you want to do the next email, lad?
No. It's not in my contract.
Okay, I'll read the next one.
All right.
It's from Tissum Tissum, which is Ben, but I just like calling him Tissum Tissum.
I like calling him Tissum Tissum. Sounds like we're sneezing.
It's like a little dainty sneeze.
Tissum, yeah, Tissum Tissum.
Well, do we want to wait on this one? Because it's for an upcoming episode.
Oh, that's actually for Resurrection.
All right, yeah, we've not watched that one yet. And, okay. Sorry, Ben.
But we do have another one from him. And I just want to see if it looks like we can do this one, right?
Yeah, this one looks like we can do it. Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah, this one just came in about a week ago. I don't think I've read this at all.
Okay. Yeah, but we're not going to hear it until May.
Oh my God.
Listeners have been nodding off along with your comments on the last few episodes.
Nodding along, not nodding off.
No, they're nodding off. Actually, by the way, the email is called Mostly Right. It's like Mostly Dead.
Right is what we are most of the time, I think.
Listeners have been nodding along with your comments on the last few episodes. Agree that he was without sin certainly is far from great, but isn't the abomination some think. Agree that Things Past has some good elements, but doesn't totally land. And agree that the ascent is fun enough, but slight. We're pretty much through the main slow part of season 5. There's one more lull to come, but otherwise, on to the good stuff. One thing you didn't talk as much about was that Things Past is clearly a setup as a companion piece to season 2's necessary evil. Between the flashbacks to young Odo, poorly lit Terok Nor, and the ending with a big scene with Odo and Kira on opposite sides of the desk digesting the past. When I first watched Things Past, I thought the echo was distasteful. Kira's secret is that she murdered people and continued to hide it from her closest friends years after the fact. Odo's secret is that one time he did a sloppy investigation that led to people dying at others' hands. At first, I was really bothered by the implied equivalence there, or maybe just bothered by the fact that Necessary Evil is simply a much better episode than Things Past. I've begrudgingly accepted that Odo might well see his own failures in that light, and I'm fonder of TP as a whole than I used to be. It's an episode with some great individual scenes and showcases that LeVar Burton is a pretty damn great director for a blind guy. Since Andy mentioned it, I guess I could speak about Bashir's replacement. Yeah, at this point we all know what that's all about. One of the most exciting moments in the first time through season 5 was seeing the real Bashir emerge in the old blue uniform in Purgatory's shadow. And one of the most disappointing things upon rewatching is how little fake Bashir has to do with anything. You have Bashir and DS9 at your fingertips, and you use them to set up some typical villain trap. It plays like it's there for shock value and little else. As always, the changelings can perfectly assimilate wherever they want flawlessly, and they almost never bother to do so. So anyway, the show never tells us how long Bashir has been replaced for, and the writers certainly didn't tell Sadig about it, but the uniforms might lead one to conclude that the Bashir from Rapture onward is fake. I don't buy it. He was waiting all this time for his little plan to blow up the station while ignoring having Sisko's brain in his hands in Rapture. Should we draw something into him presiding over the baby changeling in The Begotten, given that nobody ever seems to find it noteworthy? And he's there for what seems like months, and seems totally normal to everybody? It doesn't hold up. The whole thing really only makes sense if Bashir was replaced sometime after The Begotten. The uniform doesn't definitively prove anything. Maybe we could no-prize it by saying that maybe Bashir was abducted on his way to a conference at a starbase that hadn't switched over to the new uniforms yet. Or maybe he was wearing the old jumpsuit as pajamas. Or something. Best, and keep up the good work, Ben. Yeah, I kind of agree, and I think we all do, and we've hit on, the look at Bashir, look what he's doing kind of thing. So, yeah, I think the reality of it is the writers came up with the changeling Bashir after they had done those episodes. And they were just like, shh, don't notice.
Look over there. Look at the rabbits.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what what Tissum says.
Yes, and very eloquently so. Oh, we agree entirely.
Still waiting for the charts and graphs, though.
And the 8x10 glossy photo with a paragraph on the back explaining each.
You can get anything you want at Tissum's restaurant.
Well, that'll be a long song. You can get anything you want at Tissum's restaurant, except Cardassians. We don't serve Cardassians here.
The droids will have to wait outside.
So, I guess that only leaves one last thing for the show.
Next time, an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, an episode I remember being a big favorite because of its central science fiction idea. So I'm looking forward to revisiting The Children of Time.
The crew comes face to face with their own future.
We are your descendants.
Now, to save it, one of them must die.
Who are you to make that call?
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
You know, time travel and me, we go together like peanut butter and jelly.
Peanut butter, jelly time. Peanut butter, jelly time. Peanut butter, jelly. Peanut butter, jelly. Peanut butter, jelly.
I try so hard not to regret my life choices, and yet you've given me a reason to, Bill.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Kapla.
I didn't get a kapla out of you.
I gave a kapla.
Kapla.
No, at the end for leaving.
Yeah, I gave a kapla.
Oh, well, maybe I just sung over you.
Maybe you weren't listening.
Kapla.
Maybe you're too self-involved to notice.
Take the wax out of your ears, Bill. Pay attention.
Oh, yeah.
Let me use this bath lift and get this wax out.
Now Bill's doing a Vincent Van Gogh one-man show.
Huh?
All right.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you'd like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
But when the royalties start coming in for that closing time, I'm telling you, we'll all be sitting on a beach earning 20%.
When you said the royalties, I thought you meant the king and queen.
Yeah.
Philip!
Put on that song again!
Philip!
How much have we earned, Philip?
20%.
We'll have to pay the bloody closing time people to insist on their cut.